There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, I'm Harriet Minter, and this is the Badass Women's Hour. On this week's show, the women tackling rape culture on university campuses, a history lesson that turned into a rediscovery of self for one author, and what to do when you feel your boss is belittling you. Now, if I'm being very honest, I feel quite disengaged with the news right now, which is difficult for someone with my job. It also means that I've missed the heroic work being done by a group of women at Warwick University. Protect Warwick Women is a group of students who are staging a sit-in, or really more accurately, a camp-in, because they are camping in the truly horrible weather we're having right now, outside the university union, and they've been doing it since the beginning of March. So the group are calling on the university to review how they tackle rape and sexual assault on campus, and they're refusing to move until their demands are met. And honestly, I think they're rather brilliant. So they want things like further training on how to deal with sexual assault for campus security guards and for students to have an input on staff training, which I think is the bit the university is balking on because they feel, well, they should organise the training and it shouldn't be down to the students to tell the staff how to behave. But quite frankly, I think that Generation Z, is that what they are? Generation Z? Basically just know more about this stuff. They are better. We should be putting them in charge of everything because they are better on it. I personally can't wait until I'm old enough to retire and I can just hand everything over to that generation and they can be in charge of it. This actually isn't the first time Warwick University has run into trouble over how it deals with rape. In 2018, the Chancellor had to apologise to female students after basically what was called a, quote, rape chat group, unquote, was discovered to be circulating. So this was two guys on the campus who had a chat group where they talked about how they wanted to kind of violently sexually assault various students. And they were both banned from the university. But then earlier this year, another man was accused and I think kind of agreed to be guilty of groping a female student on campus, and he was just allowed to continue his studies. And so it seems like perhaps Warwick hasn't really been dealing with things in a way that the women on campus think they should be, and so they have taken matters into their own hands. Plus, obviously, Everyone's Invited, the website that talked about sexual assault in schools, has really brought this issue to the fore. And we've got a generation of young women who are just not putting up with this shit anymore. And thank God for that. The sexual politics of your late teens and early 20s are complicated enough as it is without making kind of boys will be boys excuses for the bits that are clearly wrong. So I'm cheering on Protect Warwick's Women this week. They are doing the work that I wish I had been, quite frankly, aware enough to do when I was their age.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast.
This week's interviewee provided me with a history lesson. Speak Okinawa is the memoir of writer Elizabeth Miki Brinner and outlines her relationship with her mother and her mother's heritage. In this interview, we talk about growing up, quotes, different at a time when homogeneity is prized and the relationship between mothers and daughters.
For people who don't know the history of Okinawa, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, yes. Well, it's an island off the coast of Japan and also off the coast of China. It's about right in the middle, distance-wise. And at first, it was a tributary of China for many centuries. And then eventually, it was colonized by Japan and then annexed by Japan. What most people don't know, so it's currently a prefecture of Japan, but most people are unfamiliar with the history of its colonialism and its colonization, and how devastated it was by the Battle of Okinawa. Many people have heard of the Battle of Okinawa, but I don't think they're familiar with just how just immense the toll was for the Okinawan population. So it was about one third of the population was killed. About 140,000 Okinawans, almost all of them civilians. There are maybe 20,000 conscripted soldiers fighting. So almost all of them were civilians, children, and then the campaign, which was just to bomb the island, just hundreds of thousands of bombs to demolish the island. Just it wiped everything out. So it not a building was left standing. There were no trees. There were no grass. The images that I read about is just the whole island was charred black. And so anyone who did survive was homeless for many years afterwards and lived in refugee camps, including my family, my grandmother and my mother's older brothers and sisters. And then after the Battle of Okinawa, that started the period of militarization of so the U.S. Occupied Okinawa for about 20 years. And it was actually an occupied territory of the U.S. It was returned to Japan in 1972, but the bases still remain. And about 20% of Okinawa's landmass is U.S. military base.
So there's still U.S. military presence there today.
Yes, yes. Wow. And it's highly contested, too.
And so you obviously have a personal connection to this through your mother, but you grew up in the States. Tell us a little bit about your mother and how she came to be in the States and your childhood.
Yeah. Well, my mother, she was working as a nightclub hostess. She was a cocktail waitress at a nightclub called the Blue Diamond, and it was stationed. It was right outside the Army base, and my father was stationed at the Kadena Army base, and he went to the nightclub that my mother worked at. And this was a nightclub that catered to soldiers. That's what it was all about. My mom told me that she got paid $1 for every drink she got a serviceman to buy for her.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. It's a an interesting way to
how to make a living.
Exactly. And for, you know, she grew up in this, and she was very enamored with American culture and the power and agency it represented. So she liked being around the soldiers. She thought of it as this kind of a way to escape the subjugation of the island. And my father was stationed on the island right after he served in Vietnam. He served two tours of duty in Vietnam, so he had a lot of trauma and baggage as well. And so I think when they met each other, they both, you know, my mom wanted to feel safe and protected, and my dad really wanted to protect and save. So these two mentalities converged. And they met and they married, and shortly after, and they married on the island. Mm-hmm. And it was discouraged for a military to marry natives. Mm-hmm. But since my father was a commanding officer, he signed his own approval. So they moved to the United States, and they moved to, they hopped around for a while. At first they lived in New York City, in my father's childhood home in Manhattan. And then they traveled around as my dad was looking for work. They settled in a suburb of Rochester, New York. in upstate New York, where I grew up, and it was a predominantly white suburb. My mother and I like stuck out like sore thumbs. and that's how I felt growing up. I just felt very outcasted, and just like I didn't belong, I didn't fit in. I felt just feeling exposed all the time. Like everyone's looking at me. I mean, as children, we always feel that way.
Yeah.
But I felt just very, very different from everyone else, and I felt that it was. I sensed that it was because of my mother, and I blamed her for it. And so I was very estranged from her for most of my life and gravitated more toward my father.
And did you actually experience either racism or bullying when you were growing up? Or do you think it was more of an internal thing that you felt?
Oh, I definitely experienced it. I mean, it was so, this is the 80s and 90s, yeah, where we don't have a lot of vocabulary or sensitivity, yeah, about these issues. And I mean, a lot of it was just, kind of more innocent questions. Like, where are you from? Are you Chinese? Why is your father white? but a lot of it was very cruel too. I had, I was called as a child of pejoratives. My nickname in middle school was Gorilla Woman, and and people would cut out pictures of monkeys and gorillas and put them in my desk and locker, and it was very, very painful. And I don't think at the time I realized that it was racist. I just thought, yeah, oh, it's just because I'm ugly, right? Yeah. And I wasn't making the connection as a child.
Yeah.
But I still and subconsciously knew, because I lashed out against my mother because of it. I was still able to make the connections on a very subconscious level, but I wasn't allowing myself to understand the implications.
I think there is something kind of universal for mothers and daughters, which is this point in our growing up where our mothers have expectations for us. I think I think your mum, my mum, probably similar age, where, you know, we have access to things that they could only have dreamed of having access to. And so they want all of that for us. And there's huge expectation. And then we feel, as all children do, right, a need to kind of break free from any parental bond. And so we, you know, rebel against it, or we don't want what they want, or we go against their expectations and their ideas, and everything they want is wrong. But how did that play out for you, given the kind of particular circumstances that you found yourself in?
Mm-hmm. I mean, my mother grew up in absolute poverty. No running water. They had to go to a public well and bathe outside. And she just says she remembers just being starving for most of her childhood, just always hungry. And so my mother she's so happy to be able to provide a better life for me. She's so, and I think it was very confusing to her that I wasn't happy. You know, I wasn't a happy child. I took all of it for granted, and she couldn't understand why. She's like, what more could you want? I have my own bedroom. I have a fully stocked fridge. I have all these things. And so there's a class issue as well. And then also, I think she too, you know, the ideas that you have with a daughter of how your daughter's going to complete you, right? Like everything that bad that ever happened in your life, you know, now I get to redeem it now. And so there was that expectation that longing for this bond and this connection that I and for most of my life I resented it, and I rejected it because it made me feel bad. You know, it just made me feel guilty, and I didn't have the capacity yet to connect with her.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
As a kind of teenager, as a young woman, what did that mean for you and your life and kind of how you approached life?
I was very rebellious. It was very difficult for me to follow rules. And even though my mom was just pouring of love, she loved me so much. She tried so hard to be there for me and connect with me, but it wasn't the kind of love I wanted. I couldn't appreciate the language barrier or the class barrier, the cultural barrier. All I couldn't appreciate how she couldn't connect with me on my terms. Yeah. So I certainly still felt a void. I my mother and I hardly spoke growing up. And I think from that void, I was very attention seeking from mostly from men. I threw myself at boys and just vied for their attention, did ridiculous things in order to get their attention, very much demeaned myself for their approval. So I think that was definitely part of it.
I think we're lucky now that we live in a generation when people talk about these things, where we're aware that actually not everyone has the most perfect relationship with their parents, and that's kind of not really a fault thing, it's just how generations interact and what happens. How did you get to a place then of changing your relationship with your mother? Or have you?
Absolutely. I'm very grateful every day for how we've been able to heal. We have a great relationship, but I'm still very remorseful for all the time that was wasted. It took so long. And there was beginnings, there were little whisperings of it when, by the time I got to my mid 20s and I realized how difficult it is to be a woman, that it's not, it is not an easy road. And then seeing my mother more as a woman, right, than my mother, and realizing that so many of the things that she did was not her fault. There were responses. I mean, she was a pretty severe alcoholic for a while, and that had everything to do with her loneliness and her isolation and everything, and the way that she had been treated growing up, a cocktail waitress in a nightclub outside a military base. So I just began to forgive her more for that. I went to, when I was 33 years old, I went to Okinawa. I took a trip with my parents to visit her family. And that really opened my eyes just of how amazing and wonderful the culture is, and also realizing the sacrifice and what she left behind. Yeah. And I started investigating more her heritage, my heritage, and the history. I was 34 years old before I learned the history of Okinawa, which is incredible. I can't believe that it took that long. Once I understood her history, mm-hmm. I very much began to understand her and myself, the reasons why she's like this, the reason why she was put in this situation of marrying a soldier and moving to the United States.
Did she ever try and talk to you about her history or her culture when you were growing
up? She tried desperately to talk to me about her personal history, right? Her personal experiences, her family, her marriage to my father, and how complicated it was and very difficult. That was another thing I realized too, as a woman. I'm like, my dad's an amazing father, but yeah. You know, just that perspective. But never about actual the collective history and the culture. And I think part of it was maybe she didn't think that she needed to, because she thought of me as her, right? She didn't think that that was something that you had to educate. But I think part of it too, with how Okinawa was colonized, there's that sense of inferiority. And I think that she didn't think it was important, or that it would, I think it's one of the reasons why I was raised not knowing the culture or the history or the language, is that, all you need to know is English. All you need to know is American culture. That's what's going to get you ahead in life. This other stuff isn't important. I think subliminally, maybe all of us thought that. Mm.
I think that's so interesting, like recognizing that kind of part of her history had made her maybe kind of dampen down her culture and where she came from, and almost you picked up on that and kind of amplified it. Do you think it's important for us as humans to have these moments, as you had, you know, in your early 30s, when you suddenly went, oh, hang on, this, my parent is a whole person beyond my parent, and that explains them? Do you think it's important for us as humans to have that moment of growth?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think that there's, I think if we really want to move forward and not minimize the hurt, the hurt that we feel and the hurt that we cause, you know, it's all cyclical. It all perpetuates. It all comes from, I feel like it all comes from voids and pains and things unresolved. and you keep, and we keep trying to resolve them sometimes through our children, and our other relationships, right? Our other, not just through our children, but, you know, partners and friends. So I think it's incredibly, incredibly important to see, to understand the people who influenced you most and impacted you the most, and try to understand them as human beings, and have compassion for them in order to, you know, have it for yourself and for other people.
And you wrote about this experience and this understanding in your book, Speak Okinawa. What did the process of writing about it give you?
The process of, oh God. This book was, I don't know. I feel like it, in a lot of ways, it saved, not gonna be that dramatic, like saved my life, but it made it better. It made my relationship with my mother better. It made me a better person. I think when you, taking the time to write it, the purpose of writing it, which was to understand why I am the way that I am, and to finally incorporate this heritage that I had rejected for so long, to finally integrate it in myself. So the act of writing is so powerful, because you can collect your thoughts, you can hold everything still, you can look at it, make connections. And I don't know if I would have been able to do that without writing the book. And because of the book too, I had asked my mother a lot of questions and about her life, and it got us talking, and it got us comfortable talking with each other. Before then, I always felt very forced and strained to me. But now that I understand and appreciate so many things about her, I'm very happy just for the small talk, and I realize that the small talk is code for so much else. It was a great experience. I'm very grateful for it.
I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it. Actually, we all make small talk with our family so much, and sometimes we get frustrated with it. And actually, it's code for so much more. Elizabeth, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for talking to me. It's been lovely hearing your story and learning a little bit more about you and your culture and heritage. And Speak Okinawa, a memoir, is out now. Just beautiful story and so much more to learn. Elizabeth, thank you. That was Elizabeth Minky-Brinner, and her memoir, Speak Okinawa, is out now. Now, this week's listener problem is an old-fashioned issue in a new tech world. How do you deal with a boss that's bullying you? Our listener writes, I've always felt a bit left out of my team. We're a small group and there are clear allegiances, but I've also got on well with my boss. He's a bit of an introvert and not the best manager, but our relationship was fine until lockdown. Since we all started working from home, we haven't had one team meeting together. Instead, he talks to us all separately and then sends group emails letting us know what's going on. The problem is that in these emails, his tone can be quite belittling. Recently, he took me off a project and put my colleague on it, and the first I knew about this was when he put me on the group email. I felt embarrassed that he'd taken me off the project, presumably he didn't think my work was good enough, and that he told everyone else before talking to me. I think I need to leave and get another job, but I'm so angry at the way I've been treated that I can't seem to concentrate long enough to fill in a job application. What can I do? I can absolutely understand your anger, and also this is the sort of thing that really frustrates me, and I've seen a lot of in the last year or so, which is companies who don't provide any sort of management training to their managers and who haven't adapted that management training for working from home. So they've just said to managers, carry on as you are, not realizing that actually their managers aren't doing very well as it is, put in working from home, and they're completely lost. I've worked with companies to try and make this better, and you can make it better, and you can have people who are really good remote managers, but you have to put training and structure in place for them. So anyway, that's my rant. It's really annoying. It's also really unfortunate because what happens is that great team members end up leaving because of bad management. In fact, we know the number one reason that people give for leaving their job is lack of management or not getting on with their manager.
And that's something that can be so easily resolved. But it's not your job to resolve it. That sits with the HR team and management of your boss. But it's your job to try and make yourself feel like you've done something about it. So I totally understand that it feels like the easiest option right now is to just get another job and go somewhere else. But you've also got to realize that this here is an opportunity for you to kind of grow and practice being brave at something. And that means you have to talk to your boss. So get some of those specific examples together, things that you feel that perhaps he was belittling you or you felt very uncomfortable with, and talk to him about that. Now, when you're talking to him, you probably want to try and take out as much emotive language as you can. So you can say, I didn't feel this was phrased in the best way, or actually, I felt really uncomfortable, or when you said this, I felt as though you were belittling me. So don't say, you belittled me when you said this. Say, when you said this, I felt as though. What you're doing there is you're giving them the opportunity to say, oh my gosh, that's absolutely not what I wanted to do. Thank you so much for pointing it out to me. I'm going to change my behavior going forward, if you're lucky. In all reality, probably they're going to feel quite confronted by it. They're going to find it perhaps challenging to have somebody below them, challenging the way that they manage. But you might find that if they are generally a good boss, they use this as an opportunity to try and change. So also have some suggestions for how perhaps things could be different. So if you think you should be having team meetings, suggest, I think it would be helpful if we had a Zoom meeting as a team once a week or once a month. Perhaps suggest to them, actually, if you are going to move people around on projects, could you just let them know first and then put it on a group email? Or just move them around on projects. Do we even need to put it on the group email? People like this show up specifically to challenge us and to help us kind of step out of our comfort zone. And if you want to move up in your career, if you want to progress, at some point you're probably going to have difficult conversations with the people you manage. So this is a great opportunity to practice. And then finally, the thing that I noticed about your email was you said, you know, it felt as though perhaps everyone else's opinions are more important than your own. So it felt as though you were saying, I think my boss doesn't think I could do a good job, that perhaps he felt belittled because he'd put this out to the group. I can understand why, absolutely. But I'd also encourage you to see if you can try and find a place where other people's opinions are less important. So do you think you were doing a good job on that project? Are you happy with your work? Do you think you are a good team member who brings something to the group? Your opinion is more important than your boss's and your colleagues. And when you focus on your opinion of yourself, what that will help is to kind of fill up that level of self-esteem, to put into the self-esteem well, if you like, so that actually when you do decide to go and apply for another job and when you're ready to do that, you are going to be doing it from the best possible place and with a belief in yourself. And that means you're more likely to get it. Good luck. This feels like a really good time to remind everyone that I have a book all about working from home. WFH, How to Build a Career You Love, is out now from all fabulous booksellers and tackles exactly these kinds of problems. Hope you've enjoyed this week's show. If you have, good news, there'll be another one next week, although slightly different because I'm actually on holiday next week. So you'll be getting some roundup of some brilliant interviews that haven't yet been broadcast. But I won't be doing a listener problem or the news because, well, I'm going to record it early, so the news would be out of date. But I'll be back, same show the week after, slightly different show, next week.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using @BadassWomen'sHour. Or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.